This is an iHeart podcast.
Trump is immune, but we don't know how immune. So let's find out from Josh Hammer. Ned Ryan thinks Trump is in trouble this November still, even with Biden like this. That's crazy. Gavin Newsom, Ilhan Omar sucks. All that and more coming up on I'm Right. Wow, do we have so much for you on the Supreme Court stuff. I mean, I don't. I have a few things. First, we have good and bad. We'll get to Josh Hammer to analyze the immunity thing here in a moment. Let's start with the bad. The bad news is Steve Bannon going to jail now. This all came from the sham January 6th political committee. So now you can create a committee that's a total sham. And after you're done creating the committee that's a total sham, they will do things that will allow them to throw their political opponents in jail. He's not the first. Peter Navarro went a couple months ago. Democrats are throwing their political opponents in jail. They are. We now live in a country where Democrats throw and attempt to throw Republicans in jail for purely political reasons. This isn't some third world dump we're making fun of. This is the land of the free. So that's the bad. The good is the Supreme Court ruled today on immunity, and they ruled that Trump is immune. Okay, what does that mean? How immune? Totally immune? A little immune? I don't friggin' know. Let's ask Josh Hammer about that. Joining me now, my friend Josh Hammer, host of America on Trial. Josh, okay, Trump is immune. Woohoo! Sounds great. How immune is he, Josh?
Well, that kind of is a million-dollar question, Jesse, and the Supreme Court doesn't fully answer that question today, but this is basically as big a win for Donald Trump as could have been reasonably possible under these circumstances. So, you know, I mean, not to toot my own horn, Jesse, but I guess I'll do it a little bit here. I mean, on America on Trial with Josh Hammer for basically the past 2-3 months, I've been predicting essentially this exact outcome, which has been largely what most right of center court watchers have been predicting, which is they say that there's no such thing as full sweeping immunity for literally every single thing a president does in office. So there's not going to be an absolute victory for Donald Trump. But on the other hand, Jack Smith's claim that there's no immunity is farcical and laughable. So both of those extreme claims lost. It's generally a win for Donald Trump. This is the best case scenario of all of the outcomes that were possible. So what they basically said is that for core Article 2 constitutional function duties, for all core constitutional acts, a president does have absolute immunity, period, full stop, end of story. So we're talking here about commander-in-chief clause, use of the military, appointments clause, where you're hiring a new cabinet secretary or you're firing an inferior person deep down in the bureaucracy. When it comes to hiring and firing personnel, commander-in-chief, military, absolute immunity. No one can possibly bring charges after you're president for that. Then there's a lower tier for acts that are in his official duty but aren't core constitutional functions. One example would be the kind of act that the president shares with a different branch of government like the Congress. This, according to Chief Justice John Roberts, is where January 6th falls into. So, for example, the president's coordination, or rather his communication, with the vice president, Mike Pence, leading up to January 6th, this would be part of his official duties because he obviously has the official duty to communicate with his vice president and to push his agenda through the Senate. And the vice president is the president of the Senate under a constitution. So for these official acts that are not core constitutional, you have a rebuttable presumption of immunity, meaning that we presume there's immunity, but the other side can make an argument before the judge trying to overcome this threshold. So Jack Smith's going to have an uphill slog back in district court to prove that anything January 6th related is prosecutable. And then, as we predicted, there's that third bucket, Jesse, as well, where there's unofficial acts which get you no immunity at all, which, again, I won't toot my own horn too hard, but that's what I predicted and what many others predicted as well.
Okay, so walk me through this as best you can, Josh, and I will give you the floor. We all know Trump's getting sentenced, I believe, in a couple weeks in New York City. So there's that. There's the Jack Smith stuff. Now, you said he has an uphill slog, but it's up to a judge. I'm assuming a judge from the filthy D.C. District Court. And then there's the Fannie Willis stuff, if that stuff's still going on. And there's the document stuff. So there's a lot of different things. So where does this ruling, how does it pertain to any or all or none of these things?
Yeah, great question. So let's take it one by one then. So the New York case does not have anything to do with what happened today, because the hush money case is all pre-presidential conduct, the so-called hush money stuff. So nothing that happened there was implicated from today. Now, the sentencing is coming up July 11. Trump will get his shot on appeal there. There's all sorts of glaring constitutional problems there. I see a Sixth Amendment issue, a 14th Amendment due process issue. There's a lot going on there, but today's ruling does not affect that. The Georgia case, it actually does. I mean, because the Georgia case does pertain to his phone calls that he made, including that phone call to Brad Raffensperger, the Secretary of State of Georgia, on January 3rd, 2021. Now, this likely is in that murky second bucket. So, for example, that phone call from Trump to Raffensperger would be an official act, but likely not a core constitutional act. So that's going to ultimately have to go back to a lower court for fact-finding as well. You know, recall that the Georgia trial is currently on hold for now. They're not going to have anything to do with that until October. So that's very much kind of on the back burner right now. We're trying to figure out whether or not Fannie Willis could even stay on the case. That's where we are right now. But there are some possible ramifications for this ruling in that case. Now, perhaps the most interesting part of today's ruling at the court, at least to me, Jesse, is this wonderful concurring opinion from Justice Clarence Thomas, parts of which John Roberts echoes in his majority opinion, which calls into question the legality and the constitutionality of Jack Smith being a special counsel in the first place. Which, by the way, Judge Aileen Cannon has been screaming from the rooftops about this for months now. She held an evidentiary hearing on this very subject about a week and a half ago, and the liberal media has been screaming at her, "Oh, you're just a Trump lackey. This is a crazy claim. How can you have a hearing on this?" Well, Clarence Thomas, and to an extent, really the majority opinion, now provide ample support there. So I think Judge Cannon is probably going to have to double down in the classified documents case and really kind of prolong these hearings as to whether or not Jack Smith has any business whatsoever bringing these charges. Is there a statute that gives him this office? Did Congress create the special counsel's office in the first place? These are very real and legitimate questions. And, you know, if Judge Tanya Chutkan in D.C., pertaining to the other Jack Smith probe, if she wants to do her job, then she will go ahead and entertain those questions at the trial court level as well. She's a bit of an anti-Trump hack, so I'm not sure if she will. But you look at all of what I just said, and then you combine it with the Fisher case that came out on Friday pertaining to the J6ers, because two of the four charges against Trump in the Jack Smith D.C. case, two of those four charges pertain to the same statute that the court just narrowed in the Fisher case. Jack Smith is really bad, dude. I mean, Jack Smith has now had two horrible, horrible days at the court in a row. He's probably got to be considering a different profession, if I had to guess at this point.
Gosh, that's wonderful to hear. Okay, so let's talk about those J6ers who are rotting in prison. Are they getting sprung, Josh? Are sentences being reduced? Any of them? All of them? How does this recent Supreme Court ruling about that, how does it pertain to them?
So every single J6er who has been prosecuted or is being prosecuted or has even had a sentence come down already pertaining to this particular provision now has a very viable legal claim to either get their prosecution tossed out, if they've been sentenced, to get their sentence reduced on the back end, or various other remedies like that. If they took a guilty plea deal, then they can now make a formal motion to revoke that formal plea deal because the basis on which they've been charged has been deemed illegitimate. So they're going to have all sorts of legal options. Now, you know, Jesse, it's worth pointing out the Department of Justice put out this kind of ridiculous press release over the weekend. I think they put it up on Saturday, essentially telling the American people, look, you know, the Fisher case, not a huge deal. Yes, roughly 30 J6ers. We've been prosecuting them under this particular statute. But don't worry, most J6ers we've been prosecuting under a lot of different statutes there. It was a very kind of haughty and supercilious press release from the DOJ. I kind of hated reading it there. But I guess to the extent that they're right, then yes. I mean, the J6ers who were not prosecuted on this specific statute, they're likely not going to have a huge effect, but there are a bunch of J6ers whose claims, when it came to the Fisher underlying statute, they're going to have now a real case to have a sentence reduced at a bare minimum. And again, it looks to me like two of the four charges against Donald Trump in his DC case, if we're going to have an intellectually honest judge, which we might not have that in Tanya Chutkan, but an intellectually honest judge would probably toss out those two charges at a bare minimum.
Yeah, well, I won't be holding out for Tanya Chutkin to do the right thing, that's for sure. Okay, I can't let you go without digging into this Chevron thing, because honestly, between the debate and all the other stuff, Trump kind of is overshadowing everything, as he's wont to do, just because he's Trump. But the Chevron case may have more to do with saving the United States of America than anything that it has to do with Donald Trump. What was this about?
Yeah, so Chevron deference has been a longstanding white whale of the conservative legal movement, essentially since I started law school. I mean, even before that, really. But, you know, for as long as I've been in the conservative legal world, Jesse, this has probably been just below Roe versus Wade and affirmative action and maybe one or two other cases. This has been a longstanding priority. So Chevron deference takes its name from a case called Chevron, obviously, from the mid-1980s. And what they basically did was they made an appeal to judicial restraint, and they said that when Congress legislates a statute using ambiguous language, then the agency has a broad swath of leeway, of legroom to interpret the statute in a way that is reasonable. So if one, Congress writes an ambiguous statute, and two, the agency's interpretation of that statute is reasonable, then the courts have no say. They just can't weigh in, and the agency's rule is what it is. Now, this may have made sense back in the 1980s, back when the Reagan administration was trying to undo the Jimmy Carter era, trying to undo 30 years of judicial activism from the Warren Court. The problem with Chevron is that it's just a blatant violation of the separation of powers. So Marbury versus Madison, 1803, where John Marshall gives us judicial review for the first time, he famously said, quote, "It is emphatically the province of the judiciary to say what the law is." And it's true. That is the role of Article 3 of the judiciary, to say what the law is. So you can't then just invent a rule that prohibits the judiciary from saying what the law is. So the practical effect of overturning Chevron, which is long overdue, is that the administrative state is going to have much less power to interpret its own statutes, and the courts are going to be more hands-on and more involved. So that should be a very good thing in the mid to long term when it comes to reducing and ideally fully deconstructing the behemoth that is the modern administrative state.
Josh, thank you, my brother, as always, for breaking all this stuff down for you. I appreciate it. All right. Let's get the lay of the land on Joe Biden's candidacy, what America is, and a couple other things next. Before we do that, let's do this. Let's talk about values. You know, when I talk about Blackout Coffee, I could tell you about the coffee. Ah, they deliver it. It's the best coffee I've ever had. I can tell you all these things. I can tell you could get whole bean coffee. That's what I prefer. If you're one of the K-Cup people, they have those too, whatever you want. But I like Blackout Coffee because they share my values. They promote my values. As I've gotten older and as I've watched the rot in my society, I've gotten much more diligent about that, where I spend and don't spend my money. Be very careful where you buy your coffee. It's one of those industries that's just kind of gross. Blackout Coffee, though, they're there talking about the things you care about. 20% off your first order. Blackoutcoffee.com/Jesse. We'll be back. All right, we will get to the talk about Joe Biden, whether he's staying in, not staying in, what's the latest and worst on all that in just a minute. But I did want to address something really quickly before we get to that, something that happened over the weekend. Maybe you've seen video of this or heard some audio about it. Ilhan Omar, who is she? Ilhan Omar, congresswoman from Minnesota. She's Somali by birth. Her parents were communist activists in Somalia. And then, because this country does what it does, we mass imported a bunch of people from Somalia into the United States of America. Tens and tens and tens of thousands of them. I should point out that Somalia is maybe the worst place on the planet. The culture is one of starvation, violence, warlords, and female genital mutilation, which happens at a rate of over 90%. And the United States of America looked at Somalia and said, man, we need a lot of that here. And so people like Ilhan Omar came to America. And she did this big event in Minneapolis over the weekend. She's running for re-election. Only it was an event with a bunch of Somalis there. Not an American flag in sight, not a Minnesota flag in sight, Somali flags in sight, though. And a former prime minister of Somalia got up to speak at the event, and this is what he had to say.
قضيه الهان معها قضيه الهان معها قضيه مينيسوتا معها قضيه رير مريكان قضيه الهان وقضيه صوماليا
Somalis. And I saw, this is what I saw a lot of, and I understand this reaction. Maybe you're saying this. In fact, I bet you are saying this. She needs to get out of Congress. She doesn't belong in Congress. I saw many, many, many people say this, actually. I saw people say, she needs to get out of Congress because she doesn't represent America. Okay, well, let's have a hard talk. And again, remember, it's not your mommy's show. It's your daddy's show. Let's have a hard talk. Not a talk you want or a talk I want that makes us feel better. Let's talk about reality. Why should she leave Congress? Well, because she doesn't represent America. Doesn't she? Doesn't that perfectly represent what America has become? The elites who run the United States of America, and really almost every Western civilization, they have been importing people en masse from the third world for decades with the intention of crowding out the patriotic citizen and remaking America into some hodgepodge disaster where no one shares any cultural values, and it allows these elites to stay in power forever. So you may not want Ilhan Omar to represent America. I may not want Ilhan Omar to represent America. But the truth is, Ilhan Omar perfectly represents America. And a rally with no American flags and a sitting member of Congress standing there as a man says, we don't care about America or Minnesota. This is about Somalis represents America in 2024 perfectly. You may not like it, I may not like it, but I say Ilhan Omar is exactly where she belongs. That is America now. And if you've ever uttered the words in your life, well, I'm kind of an immigration squish, then it's your fault. Did you know that? Now, speaking of fault, let's move on. Let's talk about Joe Biden. As you know, I've been predicting for, 2 years now? I don't know that we were first. You never want to claim to be first, but we were one of the first telling you Joe Biden's not going to be the nominee. This is not. The system's going to get rid of him because he's too much of a liability. I've been telling you that. You watch this show for any length of time, you know I've been telling you that for 2 years. Everyone's saying it now. We've been on this for a long, long, long time. And now, I've got to be honest, I may turn out to be wrong. That prediction may turn out to be wrong. But it's closer than ever before. And I'll tell you why. There's a main reason why. Because my wife and I actually disagree on this. She and I were arguing back and forth on it. She thinks they're going to keep him. They're never going to get rid of him. I said, no, baby, they're going to get rid of him. And she asked me, this was yesterday, she said, why would you think that? Why did you think that? Well, here's the thing. It's easy in whatever walk of life you're in, whether it's business world or sports or politics or whatever, it's easier to convince yourself to keep going, forge ahead, when you have people with you, supporting you. Go! You can do it! And when those people stay with you, it inspires you. You know, we are human beings who are inspired by the presence and encouragement of other human beings. It's why in the Marine Corps, when you're digging a fighting hole, you don't dig it for one person. You don't dig it for yourself. You dig it for two. Why? It's psychological. You need someone with you. As long as someone's with me, I can fight on. The reason I think we're closer now than ever to Joe Biden leaving is because Joe Biden is running out of friends. All the people in the media who have been lying for him intentionally, they all knew his condition. They've been lying for him. They've been covering up his condition. They've been covering things up. They've been telling you he's great. Well, they're now changing their tune, meaning Joe Biden's looking to his right and his left in his fighting hole, and he's all alone.
You know, one of the things was, would either candidate look like the caricature that the other campaign has been trying to paint of him? And at the end of the day, Joe Biden looks like the caricature that conservative media has been painting. And there were no clips tonight, right? This was, you saw it before your eyes.
This has been, quite frankly, a car accident in slow motion that we've seen over and building and questioning it. And, you know, as has been pointed out, Joe Biden sought this debate at this remarkably early time because he knew he was losing and he needed to change the narrative.
Yep.
And he did change the narrative. He sunk his campaign tonight.
My phone really never stopped buzzing throughout. And the universal reaction was somewhere approaching panic.
Hmm.
The people who were texting with me were very concerned about President Biden seeming extremely feeble, seeming extremely weak.
There is widespread panic among Democrats. I got a number of text messages this evening, Democrats reaching out to say this is difficult to watch. Where does this go from here? One Democratic lawmaker, Tom, going so far as to say this race is effectively over.
Those aren't just random media people. Those are four of the most low-life, Trump-hating, Biden-loving scumbags we have in the American media. Those four people have bent over backwards and forwards to do everything possible to get Joe Biden into power and keep Joe Biden into power. Those are his staunchest allies outside of his family, and they've abandoned him. Democrats have abandoned him. Jamie Raskin, you know who Jamie Raskin is? You'll know his face when I tell you the clip in a moment. Jamie Raskin is a horrid human being. But Jamie Raskin is the ultimate company man, the ultimate Democrat. There is no lie he won't tell. There's nothing he won't do in order to attack his enemies and reward his friends. Jamie Raskin never, ever, ever, ever strays from the company line, from the party line. This is Jamie Raskin now.
We're having a serious conversation about what to do. One thing I can tell you is that regardless of what President Biden decides, our party is going to be unified, and our party also needs him at the very center of our deliberations and our campaign. And so whether he's the candidate or someone else is the candidate, he is going to be the keynote speaker at our convention. He will be the figure that we rally around to move forward and beat the forces of authoritarianism and reaction in the country.
Oof. That's uncomfortable.
Well, I mean, yeah, we're talking. I mean, he's got to go, but hey, he's going to be a keynote speaker.
Brutal. Now, I should clarify something, though. Everybody hasn't run out on Joe Biden. You have the evil people who are part of Joe Biden's family, his wife, his children, brother, all these people. And I need to clarify before I play this little video of Jill. Remember this. We know this from years of reporting. Joe Biden's family has been what amounts to a political crime family for years, decades. For decades, this has been how their family set it up from this very early age. They set it up so Joe Biden would be the political figurehead and the family members would orbit around Joe Biden and figure out ways to make money based on the access Joe Biden provided for them. So Joe is the one with the power. He's the one with the access. Everyone, brothers, wives, kids, everyone orbits around that and makes money. Joe Biden has been, for lack of a better way to put it, a piggy bank for all these people for a very long time. Think of a rapper. A professional rapper with an entourage. You ever see a video or a picture of a rapper and he's got 10 dirt balls around him and you're saying to yourself, what do those guys do? Well, they act like they're his friends and they leech all his money, but he's the only one with something to sell. So do keep in mind as we get report after report after report about the Bidens encouraging Joe Biden to stay in there, that the Bidens, they don't want to lose the hand that's been feeding them for a very long time. So if you're confused why the heartless witch Jill Biden is still up there giving speeches, well, Jill Biden knows where her bread's buttered.
What you saw last night on the debate stage
stage was Joe Biden, a president with integrity and character. Who told the truth. And Donald Trump told lie after lie after lie. Oh, you're good. You're so good.
First lady. Up there giving speeches like she's the politician. Her poor, half-dead, demented husband standing there behind her, lost as can be, and she's up there trying to rally the troops. Did you know she was just on the cover of Vanity Fair? You can put it on the screen if you have it, Mr. Producer. I want you to look at that picture. Leave it up there, please, if you wouldn't mind. I want you to look at that picture. In case you're wondering why, because the rumor is that the Biden family is telling him to stay in. Everyone else is telling him to leave. Democrats, everybody, media, everyone. But the Biden family said, no, Dad, you got to stay. Joe, you got to stay. And you want to know why? I want you to look long and hard at that picture right there. That's why. Do you know how many covers of Vanity Fair Jill Biden would be on without her husband? Zero. Do you know how many she can hope for in the future if old poopy pants Joe walks out the door? Zero. Her only hope for fame and fortune is dragging her poor demented husband back to the polls again to embarrass himself in front of the planet. And what a gross place we are as a country. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We'll talk to Ned Ryan about this next, see what he thinks about things. Let's talk about Beam first, though. I want to talk about sleep, actually, more specifically. I love to sleep. You love to sleep? I'll be honest. Friday and Saturday night, we had all kinds of kid activities going on, sports tournaments and everything else. And so I'm caffeinating myself way to the max, way too much. I had way too much. And last night I told my wife, I said, I got to sleep. I got to have a good night's sleep. She said, well, go get some dream powder. It's from Beam. It's all natural. You know, melatonin, things like that. It's just a cup of hot chocolate. And the beauty of it is not that it helps you sleep. There's a million things that will help you sleep. It's that you sleep like a baby, and when you wake up, you actually feel good, not groggy like every other sleep thing. Ah, half dead, not with Beam. Beam, you wake up, and you feel like, wow, I'm ready. That's the beauty of Dream Powder. Go get some, 40% off. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
When I talk to President Biden, you know, regularly, sometimes several times in a week, or usually several times in a week, his mental acuity is great. All this right-wing propaganda that his mental acuity is declined is wrong. He's going to win the election because he has a great record.
And I'm telling you, this guy's tough. He's smart. He's on his game. And as Secretary Mayorkas said a minute ago, when you go in to brief the president, you better have your big boy pants on. And this kind of sense that he's not ready for this job is just a bucket of BS that's so deep, your boots will get stuck in.
Not only is he fit to do the job, he's doing a hell of a damn job, right? If he was weak, he wouldn't have been able to rally our allies to support Ukraine against Putin's aggression. Right? He wouldn't have driven the economy to such great success.
He's absolutely 100% with it.
President Biden was nice enough to call me. And I can tell you, this was the day before that interview. I can tell you he was sharper than anyone I've spoken to.
Yeah. There's shameless, and then there's whatever all that was. Joining me now, my friend, CEO of American Majority, Ned Ryan. Okay, Ned. Obviously, you know, I know, we don't have to belabor the point. These people are dirty liars. But when they go home at night, Ned, and they're brushing their teeth, getting ready to crawl into bed with their wives or with those people, probably cats or whatever it may be, do you think they feel any shame or guilt? Or are these people just totally so devoid of soul by now that it stirs nothing in them?
I don't think they feel any shame, Jesse. They are in pursuit of power. They think this is... Right now, their best opportunity to hold on to power, which is staggering when you think about what they're actually wanting for the American people. But no, I don't think they feel shame at all. Never underestimate the un-American left. You can call them commies. You can call them whatever you want to. But their lust for power, they will do or say anything that they think it is necessary to hold on to that power.
Ned, everyone knows I've been saying for a couple years, I think Joe Biden's going to get bounced. Of course, half the people in the country are saying that now, but it's still a complicated process, to put it mildly. You can't just wake up one day and decide the president's half dead and we got to replace him. This has to happen at the convention. It has to happen with Joe Biden's consent. It has to. Right. Does this thing actually happen, Ned? Or are they really? I find it unbelievable, but are they really going to just roll this guy out there in November?
I think as long as they can keep up some sort of pretense that he's still breathing, because we all know he's not anywhere near peak physical or cognitive abilities. Obviously, we saw that demonstrated on Thursday night. I think they've understood and realized, yeah, this is not an easy process. And I think part of the problem is, Jesse, a lot of the powers that are within the Democratic Party can't agree on what a path forward would look like. I mean, they know Kamala Harris is a non-starter, but then what do? You can't pass over a black woman and have Gavin Newsom. You know, how do you actually facilitate this? And then obviously there's the structural aspect of it, of how do you actually get somebody who's on the ballot off the ballot, get somebody new on the ballot? How do you transfer funds? You can't actually, I don't believe, from a Biden-Harris campaign to another candidate if Kamala's not even on the ticket. Yeah, there's a lot of things that have to be negotiated, and I just think they've decided we're going to keep this guy up there. We all know he's a Trojan horse. He's an empty husk that others are using for their own benefit. But I think they're committed to this. I'm with you, Jesse. I have been saying for a while, I thought that at some point in the summer of 2024, come convention time, maybe there would be an actual move to replace him. And post-debate, they are digging in, and they are making it very clear they think they're going to stick with Joe Biden as long as possible, and hopefully he doesn't collapse before November 5th.
Okay, now let's deal
with
this.
They can win too, by the way.
And this is an uncomfortable. What's that? Go ahead.
They can win too, by the way. I mean, this is. I have to make this very clear, Jesse. The overconfidence that I have seen post debate is a little troubling to me. I was talking to somebody today who said, "Does any of this even matter? Whether it's absentee ballot chase or non citizens getting federal ballots, does that really matter after Thursday's debate?" And I said, "It absolutely does, because I think they're better at collecting ballots. I think they're committed to holding on to power. And I think anybody that has any sense of overconfidence after Thursday's debate, guys, we got 4 months plus before the elections. They're going to figure out how to collect as many ballots as they think are necessary to try and win. And it's incumbent upon us not to be overconfident, to actually work hard all the way through the finish line."
Okay, agree with you 1,000%, but let's follow that little rabbit hole down there. Okay, they plan on cheating. We got that. They're going to chase 100%. Down ballots, even if you don't want to call it cheating. They're going to chase down ballots, whatever, however people want to put it. They're going to chase down ballots. They're going to do what they need to do for the votes. Doesn't the system run a serious risk, though, if you're going to run the guy who's half dead and down massively in every poll, and then at the end you're going to chase down enough ballots to hand him the White House, doesn't the system risk losing the last of its legitimacy at all? Or do they just not think in those terms or care?
I think it's the latter. I don't think they care. I think they're making it very clear that you dirty little peasants don't know what's best for you. Clearly, we're the best at running this country, which is obviously patently false. I don't think they care. I don't think they care about legitimacy. I don't think they care about free and fair elections. And quite frankly, Jesse, I think they gave up on representative democracy a long time ago. I would argue 100 years plus with the beginning of the administrative state. So, no, I don't think they care. They want to hold on to power. They think they know what's best. And they don't care if the American people view this as legitimate or not. I will say this. I am convinced that one of their plans to cheat is non-citizens getting federal ballots. And I think it's incumbent upon people to really track down how many non-citizens are on voter rolls, how many of them are in these key battleground states. Because again, Jesse, I don't think this is going to be a blowout. I mean, you look at 2016 and 2020 combined, less than 121,000 votes decided the states that really decided the White House. In those two elections combined, I see no reason why 2024 is going to be any different.
Yeah, I don't necessarily disagree at all. So, Ned, the RNC and the Trump campaign, which have basically merged into one now, right, as happens in an election year, are they being proactive here? I'm not asking if they fixed everything, because they don't have the power to do that, or the time, or the money. Are they being proactive with this, or is it just, woo, the debate went well, we're great now?
No, I think there are definitely some very serious people that are involved with the Trump campaign and the RNC. Susie Wiles, James Blair, these are folks out of Florida who very much believe in absentee ballot chase. And I think Susie Wiles was a great gift to Donald Trump in bringing a certain amount of discipline, not only to the campaign, but just to how he is behaving and behaving very well in a very disciplined manner. So I think there's people that I know are working on trying to do the right things, so they have enough time and money to do everything correctly. I think they're going to do the best with the money and the time that they have. I know it's an emphasis for them to do the ballot chase, do the ballot generation, and they're really focused on seven key states. So I would say yes. The question is, you know, will it be enough? I hope that between them and outside groups like myself, American Majority Action, that we will be able to conduct absentee ballot generation and chase to the levels that are needed to quite frankly, Jesse, collect more ballots, not votes, collect more ballots than the left so that Trump can win the White House November 5th.
Yeah. How can people help, Ned? When people are up there right now, they're watching, they're desperate. Oh, my gosh, what do they do?
Well, I mean, we've got field efforts going in Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, North Carolina. We're thinking about working into some other states. They can check us out at American Majority Action. Just look for our website. Come see if you're in one of those states. We'd love to have you be a part of what we're doing. Doors, phones, texting, really generating the ballots. And obviously when the ballots drop, chasing in. I think we're going to have to get to 82 to 85% of those ballots that are out there to be successful, Jesse. And if we can do that, I like our chances. But yeah, the most important thing that people need to understand, don't look at the polls. Those numbers don't count. Look at voter registration numbers. Look at absentee ballot universes. And never underestimate the left's pure lust for power. They're not going to roll over because Donald Trump's ahead in the polls. They're not going to roll over because Joe Biden had a bad debate. They're going to try to figure out over the next few months, how do they hold on to power? They're going to do everything. And I think we're in actually for a very interesting 4+ months, Jesse. I think anything and everything that we could imagine might happen probably can happen because they are so desperate to hold on to power.
I think you're right, sadly. Ned, brother, we'll talk soon. I appreciate you. All right. One of the possible replacements, maybe the big possible replacement, is Gavin Newsom. Sam Sorbo joins us next. We'll see what she thinks about him. She's had to live underneath Gavin Newsom before we talk to Sam. Maybe right now you're thinking to yourself, well, how do I get involved? Well, look, you can do a lot of political activism right here on your phone. Of course, I would suggest a Pure Talk phone. It's not just because Pure Talk's on the same great 5G network as one of the big guys. It's because you'll pay a lot less, and it's because they share and promote your values and my values. Does Verizon promote your values? Is Verizon out there trying to get veterans off the streets into good jobs, finding them medical care? Does Verizon, does AT&T, do they hire Americans? When you call AT&T, are you talking to an American who speaks English? Pure Talk does. The company that actually loves this country. PureTalk.com/JesseTV saves you a bunch of money. Go. We'll be back.
Adam Carolla here. Governor, why did you shut the beaches in California during COVID?
Yeah, I think we all were working on information at the time. We had no basis of deeply understanding the virus. I think they did the same thing.
So you didn't know anything, so why'd you shut the beaches?
States like Florida.
If you didn't know anything, why'd you shut the beaches?
Well, we didn't know. Yeah, because people were concerned early in the pandemic. Information was coming out as it related to how it was transferred, the disease, and people were cautious, trying to keep people alive. And I should say this, Adam,
so you
know this
on
health, wealth, and education.
And get vitamin
California
D
outperformed.
And exercise, so you shut the beaches. Okay. And you arrested a guy who was paddleboarding
so
in the bay.
And health, wealth, and...
Yeah, any
it's
science
good
behind
to see
that?
Adam and,
any science
we're all
geniuses behind shutting
in
outdoor dining?
That's one of the videos I will remember all my life, as that poor sap getting frog marched off the beach. I believe it was Venice Beach, because he's paddleboarding by himself in the ocean. Joining me now, Sam Sorbo, host of the Sam Sorbo Show. Okay, Sam, I can only imagine what's going through your head, hearing all the potential Gavin Newsom might be the next president talk. How do you feel about that?
Well, first of all, I don't know why he would even appear on Adam Carolla's show, but the Gavin Newsom talk for president's ridiculous. He would trail Trump, I understand, by like 17 points. So even California doesn't like him. Californians are leaving the state in droves. And so it's absurd to think that he would be floated as a potential pick for president. I find it ridiculous.
Okay, so if it's not going to be Gavin Newsom, it might potentially be, and they may be forced to choose Dome. They may be forced to choose, well, this woman here.
Yeah, girl, I'm out here in these streets. And let me tell you, you're right, Taraji. There is so much at stake in this moment. The majority of us believe in freedom and equality. But these extremists, as they say, they not like us.
No, they not.
I'm out here in these streets. Sam, how's she doing in the streets of California?
So Kamala Harris is the most, I think she's the most disliked woman in the Democrat Party today. Like, I mean, even Hillary beats her at this point. And they definitely don't want Kamala, which is why they most likely won't 25th the president. And I'm certainly, I guess I'm hopeful that they don't do that. They've really backed themselves into a corner. I just want to point out to you and your viewers so that we perfectly understand each other. This is all a play that's been written, and it is now being enacted by players. All of these Democrat operatives, somebody gave them the directive, okay, go for putting Biden under the bus. Go for throwing Biden under the bus. It's a go. And now they're all throwing Biden under the bus. And I'm sure that they have a plan. I'm sure they're planning to swap him out. They've backed themselves into a corner, though, because he is the nominee. And so he's not going to go. At least the person who is pulling his strings will be deciding whether or not he goes. And he doesn't want to go because he wants to pardon his son. And so they've really kind of backed themselves into a corner. So we will see how it shakes out. But it can't be Kamala. Come on. Really? Are you thinking that it could be Kamala?
Well, at this point in time, Sam, I don't have any idea. All these people are of different disaster of their own making. One's a tornado, the other one's a flood, the other one's a hurricane. I mean, you could choose. Just, I don't even know what to tell you. Sam, thank you. You are the best. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
All right. We have Light in the Mood next. All right, it's time to lighten the mood. And I'm going to say something I know is going to make you mad, but I got to say it anyway. I'm going to miss Nancy Pelosi. I know she's horrible, but that's part of the reason I'm going to miss her. I mean, a good bad guy makes a good movie. It makes a good book. You need a good bad guy. And tell me there's been a better bad guy, a better person for you to hate, for me to hate, than this woman right here.
This is an opportunity for Joe Biden to go out there and show he has the stamina and the rest. And by the way, while the press, and for some reason they don't, there are healthcare professionals who think that Trump has dementia, that his connection, his thoughts do not go together. And, you know, while he may be saying we're enablers, we see Joe Biden up close. We know how attuned he is to the issues, how informed he is. And I debate with him about legislation, and not debate, but discuss it with him. He's right there. So in any case, it was a bad night. Let's not sugarcoat that. It was a bad night. It was a great presidency.
She is something. And just now you know why we call her Grandma Vodka. She sounds like that all the time. I said, look, I think he did great. Do we have any more Chardonnay? I love her. Anyway, I'll miss her when she's gone. I'll see you tomorrow.
This is an iHeart podcast.